Hello and welcome to Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kausci. Niaga Spotlight goes through the week in business and future affairs, market watch, industries, analysis, and insights. We've got you covered right here on Niaga Spotlight. Well, this week on future affairs, it's Niaga Spotlight forecast for Malaysia's semiconductor industry in 2024. Now, with every aspect of the global economy being driven by technology, at the heart of this technological revolution is microchips. These tiny electronic components power our smartphones, computers, cars, and countless other devices we rely on daily. And as our reliance on technology continues to grow exponentially, the importance of microchips in the global economy becomes increasingly significant. Now, so Malaysia currently accounts for 13% of the global market for semiconductor packaging, assembly, and testing, and is aiming to boost that to 15% by 2030. A rising amount of investments in Malaysia relating to the semiconductor industry is extremely encouraging. Dato Suri Wong Siew Hai, president with the Malaysia Semiconductor Industry Association, MSIA, joins me now to discuss opportunities for the Malaysian semiconductor industry in 2024 and beyond. Dato Suri Wong, very good morning. Thank you so much for making time to join us on Niaga Spotlight.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me.
Dato Suri Wong, if we could perhaps get started with you telling us a little bit more about the E&E industry landscape in Malaysia before we begin the discussion on semiconductors per se.
Yeah. Okay, very good. As you know, the E&E industry started in 1972. At that time, it was a low-cost country and most people came in to start off assembly tests, which is mainly in the assembly of semiconductors. But today, we are already 51 years old. And we have expanded from the assembly test manufacturing to beyond assembly test manufacturing, which includes LED, EMS, electronic manufacturing services, medical device, automotive, and so on. And at the same time, most of our Malaysian companies have gone into automation, supporting that industry. So that landscape has totally changed. And over the years, the E&E industry has always been doing state-of-the-art manufacturing and the latest technology in Malaysia, which is actually very good. Now, the in 1972, the export of the E&E industry was at 230 million ringgit. Today, at last year in 2022, we exported 593 billion. That is a fantastic growth, something like a CAGR of 16.6%, which means that every 4 years, we are doubling our export. So that's really significant. Now, on top of that, you know, the E&E industry employs about 600,000 people, contributing about 7% to GDP, and also have the average national, the average E&E wages is double the national average. And not only that, the productivity is also higher. So at the rate things are going, I call the E&E industry the golden goose of Malaysia that we need to nurture and grow it.
Fantastically put. Thank you so much, Dato Suri Wong. I really appreciate the fact that you've been able to really contextualize the growth and the trajectory of the industry all the way from, as you said, the 70s, and we're now 51 years old. So digging a little bit deeper, Dato Suri Wong, now the World Semiconductor Trade Statistics, or WSTS, they're predicting a robust recovery in 2024 because what we actually saw was 2023 being a little bit of a negative year for the global semiconductor market. What factors, in your opinion, will actually be aiding in the semiconductor sector rebound in sales come next year, as we're, of course, at the end of 2023, looking towards the next year?
So let me just take a quick look at 2023, the data of our E&E export from January to October is about 484 billion ringgit. Okay. And that over that same period of time versus last year, we are negative 8%. For the global semiconductor, for the same period, they are showing a negative about 11 or 12%. So which means that our E&E industry is steady and quite resilient. And how is it happening? Is because of the one of the reasons anyway is because of the geopolitical tension that a lot of manufacturing in China were moving out, and a lot of them chose Malaysia. And that's why we are a little more resilient compared to the other parts of the world. So that's the 2023. Now, let's look forward a little bit. The global semiconductor projection is growing from last year of $575 billion, is projected to grow to about $1 trillion by 2030. For Malaysia to keep up with that market share, or keep up with that pace, we need to export our products by 2030 about $1.2 trillion. So the opportunity is out there, okay, for us to grow from 2023 to 2030. So 2023 was a little softer year compared to 2022, but 2024, we expect it to slowly come back up. May not be so fast. It depends how the world economy is, but around the world economy is projected to be about 2.9% for next year. So we don't expect that fast upturn, but we expect a gradual growth for 2024, driven mainly by AI, by cloud computing, automotive industry like EV, and so on. And also, we expect a slow return of coming back of the consumer products like iPhone, 5G, and so on.
Mm, very well put. Thank you very much for that, Dr. Sri Wong. And I think it's so interesting that crucial will be the period of the next 5 to 7 years for us to be able to harness into that trillion over dollar global market. Let me now go in from the fact that, of course, the WSTS stats are predicting an estimated growth of 11.8%. But I love that you also brought up AI. Let's move into the fact that, of course, NVIDIA has recently expressed willingness to support Malaysia's aspirations of being among top 20 countries for AI, helping develop AI ecosystem in Malaysia via building center of excellence, creating Malaysia's own AI cloud computing system, and also NVIDIA's strategic partnership with YTL conglomerate, which will potentially involve 20 billion ringgit investment. Now, zoning in a little bit closer from there, Dr. Sri Wong, would you mind elaborating on how all of this cascades into growth as well as expansion opportunities for the Malaysian semiconductor enterprises?
So as I explained earlier, the growth is not just going to be AI. Okay, mm-hmm. And now you can see that last year to this year, lots of companies are already investing in Malaysia. There are so many announcements that have been made. Now, Intel announced a $7.1 billion US dollars investment, AT&S €1.7 billion, Infineon €5 billion, TI ₱15 billion. So all these are putting in place capacity and positioning their companies for the future growth, driven by the things that I told you about. But for AI specifically, you know, there is a big demand for AI. And of course, NVIDIA's chip is very popular. And so we will benefit from it. Yes, YTL invests in their cloud computing and so on, in AI data centers and so on. All that will create a good ecosystem for the use of AI. But AI need to be harnessed. You know, a lot of people need to know how to apply AI in their work, in their business, and in their industry.
Mm, absolutely. And I think you've really hit the nail on the head by talking about how do we harness it within already existing industries. So from there, and because you also mentioned, so clearly this is the golden goose for the Malaysian economy. Now let's talk about what would be an immediate concern regarding the fact that we require cultivating local talent, because this will be essential to be able to meet this increased demand for high value, high demand skilled workers in the E&E sector. Which type of workers in specific is the E&E sector really lacking at this point in time, Dr. Sri Wong?
So let me take you back a little bit. In the RMK12, for the first time, RMK12 highlighted E&E industry as one of the 8 high strategic, high value, high technology industry. All the past RMKs, we are all buried under manufacturing. So I think the government is showing the recognition that E&E industry is really important. But just now, I said, all of the companies have announced investments and there is a huge projection forecast of growth to 2030. And currently, we already have issues with lack of engineers in particular, or lack of talents, not just engineers, but also in other areas. So why is that so? So first of all, we have a few problems. One is that the number of students studying science and engineering are dropping. Okay, so you can see the university's number of students joining engineering, the numbers is dropping. Two is that the percentage of our talent are going overseas. We estimated something like 15%. So there is a hole already because our people are leaving the country. So we can't stop it because they have their own aspiration. However, we need to fill up that hole. And on top of that, we also have issues with some percentage of engineers not meeting the industry's requirements, so to speak. And so, again, all that added up together shows that there's a shortage of talent. However, 2023, we did not really do a major hiring because of the softness of the economy, of the business, of the demand. Hiring kind of slowed down for this year. But I expect the hiring will come back into next year, especially when we had a shortage in 2022 when the demand was really high. So we need to prepare for the future growth and try to solve our talent issue. So how do we do it? Okay, so there are a few things that we are doing today to solve some of these issues. One is to get the unemployed engineers back to employment by giving them further training so that they can be hired by the industry. You know, they can go back for interview and the company says that now you meet my requirement. That's low-hanging fruit, we'll do it. But there are others that we need to do because other countries, especially our neighbor and the US and so on, are using other countries' talent. And they are very successful. They have no concerns about depriving their own citizens of jobs. In fact, they are flourishing and they are growing. And with the landscape that is projected to 2030, we need a similar strategy. We need to use other countries' talents, especially for students studying in Malaysia, foreign students studying in Malaysia, so that they can work here after they graduate. So other countries allow a 2 to 3 years for them to work immediately after graduation if the company wants to hire them. Then after that, they can convert to the full employment permit. So we need similar strategy like this. Otherwise, the opportunity for us to grow in new technology, to grow into a state-of-the-art manufacturing and processes will be missed out. And on top of that, we want to go up the value chain into design and development. If you want to go into design and development, we need talent. We cannot lose projects to other countries when we have the capability to do so. And all we need is a few more engineers to come into the country to help us capture the project, win the project, and grow from there. And once we grow, there's no looking back. We are going to continue to grow. A simple example is that Intel started with about less than 100 engineers when they started a design center. Today, they have 4,000 to 6,000 of engineers in the company doing design work. And we expect similar stories like this as we go out in time, if we have the talent. So don't worry about depriving Malaysians of a job. In fact, we're going to create more jobs if we can get the talent in place.
Thank you so much for that, Sri Wong. I find it very interesting that you are able to really hone in on what are some actionable solutions, including giving our foreign graduates who are from Malaysia the immediate availability for jobs. You also did mention the fact that on average, E&E industry salaries are about double than the national average. So speaking about the brain drain that we have already been seeing, any thoughts on how we could be attracting back some of our already qualified Malaysian engineers, but who are overseas, and sort of bring them back as part of this wave of growth towards 2030?
Now, this question is quite difficult. Talent Corp is trying to solve this program for a long time. You know, our disadvantage is the weakness of our ringgit. And if you start comparing wages, you know, if we earn 10,000 ringgit here and the other guy earn in Singapore 10,000 Sing or US 10,000, they're already earning a lot more than what our engineers would be earning. So if you think about wages, then I think it's a losing battle. However, there are many countries who have attracted their people back based on what the challenges are in the country. So if we have challenges that are compelling, that they want to contribute to the country's growth and make our country better, then there's a chance for them to come back. So in the past history, for example, in Taiwan, they brought back so many engineers from the US, even though the pay in Taiwan was lower than the US, but they came back. So we need to have a strategy for the E&E industry whereby our technology will continue to grow, more state-of-the-art processes and products are coming into Malaysia that would excite our Malaysians and say that, wow, I can do the same thing in Malaysia. I don't need to go US. I don't need to be in other countries. I can do it here and have a good quality of life. And in Malaysians, I think they have a good quality of life relative to other countries. So I think that's the only angle we can do. If you start comparing wages, it's going to be extremely difficult. But of course, wages need to increase, but we can't compete at that kind of level.
It's about the whole package, clearly, right? Yes. And how aware, Dato Sri Wong, is the government at this point in time, particularly, for example, Human Resources Ministry, etc., about these shortages impacting the E&E industry?
I think they are aware. But however, since we have a new Minister of Human Resources, I hope to set up a meeting and explain further to him. You know, we also have shortage of production workers, right? So we want to hire foreign workers, okay? But then when we all start discussing this problem, how do we motivate our Malaysian workers to join the factories, to join the E&E industry? We came up with this idea of academy in factory. We presented that idea to YB Rafizi. He likes it so much. And so he said, expand it to academy in industry. So it's not just academy in factory for the E&E industry. We piloted that. And now we go for all industry. It can be aerospace, it can be in the automotive industry and so on. So what is it all about? It is about attracting our school leavers to join the factory. Okay, for 18 months, they undergo a skill development program plus 3 months of classroom. And at the end of the 18 months, they will be certified as a manufacturing technician if they are successful on the program. And so the government is encouraging everyone to take up this program and it become a win-win, you know, win for the school leavers because after 18 months, there's a career in front of them. I can be a manufacturing technician. Win for the industry because I am attracting the for school leavers to join the factory and I'm training technician that will meet my requirement. Because one of the problems that the factories are saying, companies are saying is that we have technicians don't meet my requirement. So this one, you take care of it. And on top of that, we have a win for the government because we are hopefully can reduce the need for foreign workers because we are attracting our workers into the factory. So win all the way. And the government is giving incentive. You know, if the school leavers join this program, straight away, the government will give the school leaver 1,500 ringgit. And after 9 months, if they stay on this program, they get another 1,500 ringgit. And at the end of 18 months, if they're successful, they get another 1,500 ringgit. So that is the support the government is giving. And we hope as many companies will embark on this program and help our Malaysian workers to upskill and in return, they will help the company to be more productive. That's what we are looking for.
Sure. Thank you very much, Dato Sri Wong. I think that helps to explain the framework and what has been achieved in so far. We take a quick break. We'll be back right after for the rest of this discussion on Malaysia's semiconductor industry prospects in 2024. Welcome back, still on Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kausji, and of course, speaking to Dato'Sri Wong Siew Hai today about Malaysia's semiconductor industry prospects in 2024. Dato'Sri Wong, let's now quickly go over the fact that also TVET training under Budget 2024 has been allocated incredible 6.8 billion ringgit. How could this allocation be optimally operationalized to meet the E&E industry's needs for recruitment, retaining, and also developing talent?
You know, one of the complaints actually from the industry is that a lot of our TVET graduates do not really meet the industry standards or industry requirement. So the expectation, I guess, is that the TVET had formed a council and they got industry involved and they are trying to see how to revamp or transform the TVET education in the country. So one of the things that, since so much money is allocated, one of the things that we are looking at is to look, review the curriculum, review the how well the TVET centers are equipped that will give good training to the students who are studying in TVET. So one of the things that they got to look at will be looking at the curriculum and enhance it, and two, looking at the equipment, whereby how do we get them more involved in automation, Industry 4.0, software, equip that with proper equipment, whereby they can get proper hands-on experience. And then, you know, the TVET also is working with the industry to get hands-on experience as well. So that by the time they come out, they get both. They also get education and experience that, or at least some level experience that they are being exposed to the industry. So these are some of the things that need to be done. Now, in order for our TVET to reach a higher standard, we need some sort of accreditation or working with some very successful models, you know, in maybe overseas in Germany or elsewhere, or Belgium or somewhere, that they have this good model that they can use. So we don't need to reinvent the wheel. We just need to collaborate and use some of these approaches that these countries have used for their own TVET education. So hopefully we can get instructors from foreign who can train the trainer so that our instructors are at a level whereby they can impart the kind of knowledge and skills that are required for the industry. So that, you know, I hope can be carried out.
Fantastic. Now, speaking of collaborations, let's talk about, Dato'Sri Wong, the supply chain resilience. For the semiconductor industry, this will definitely require closer collaboration within and between companies. Some perspectives, if you may, on how this can be accelerated via digitalization, Industry 4.0, and also looking at what were some valuable lessons learned during pandemic lockdowns, which honestly can also apply for 2024, especially looking at the current increase in COVID cases that we are seeing, not just in Malaysia, but globally.
You know, during the COVID-19 pandemic and the during the movement control, MCO, you know, the companies all came together to set up the PICAS, you know, the vaccination center. A lot of the companies volunteered their premise for vaccination. And we started off with three companies to start off with the vaccination center within their premises. And they also open up to all the neighboring companies within that company, around that company. So that collaboration happened, and that's why we could speed up the vaccination for the factories as soon as possible during that time. So all that was taken place, and the support and collaboration and the cooperation was very well done. So I think we can do that the same way, even for the supply chain. You know, one of the key things is that we got to develop our Malaysian SMEs in order for them to support the growth of our companies. So that, again, the companies come together to see how can we give our Malaysian company a chance. So our Malaysia Semiconductor Industry Association encourage what I call buy local. So that when you buy local, there's a waterfall effect that I buy from this company, is getting suppliers from a tier two, and tier two will get it from a tier three. So everybody have a chance to grow. And if the company buys local, the company also will help the companies to go global, because some of the companies here have global operations. And if Malaysian, if companies in Malaysia, like the MNCs, are large local companies, buy our products from Malaysian companies, then they can also use it in their factories overseas. Then our factories can go global, so to speak. So that will be a good step, you know, in the collaboration and some of the learnings that we had in the during the COVID.
Absolutely. And also, of course, that directly relates to helping with some price controls for key materials within the industry. Dr. Sri Wong, moving in from there into, of course, the big and very popular catchphrase of late, ESG. Now, semiconductor manufacturers, of course, have energy-intensive operations, which are now actively exploring solutions to decarbonize the sector. Could you share a little bit more with us about ESG initiatives that have been happening over 2023? Also, Bursa has, of course, introduced mandatory ESG reporting platforms for PLCs earlier this month. All of this connected to the wider framework of Malaysia's semiconductor industry.
You know, the world is going on ESG. I think you cannot run away from it. And in fact, we encourage every company to embrace ESG. You know, learn about it, find out about it, and have a plan to implement the ESG program. So recently, MSIA held a conference whereby we educate our members and the public on what is ESG, what are the best known methods of implementation of ESG, what are the green financing that you can get to implement ESG to share with the larger community. Okay, so in the first step, I guess, is that after you understand, you got to implement. And for the larger companies like MNCs and large local companies and so on, they are already on the process of implementation. So the first step, I guess, is to do the lowest hanging fruit, which is install your solar panels in the car park, in the building, and so on. And then look at the energy efficiency and how do you manage your energy and convert. You know, some of the areas whereby where high energy is used, can you reduce it? For example, if street lights, you're using halogen, which is very expensive. Can you use a lot of energy? Can you convert it to LEDs and the factories? What else can you do to help to lower the usage of energy? So that is, I would say, the first step. And also, I think the government has also pass an act on energy efficiency and conservation, where they expect companies to implement all these improvements that are within their control, so to speak. Then the next step, I guess, is to create renewable energy that companies can sign up to. Or like this year, I think about 800 megawatts have been generated through the solar farm, and many companies have already signed up for it. I think it's already finished in terms of company signing up. And then over the next few years, they will generate what we call gigawatts of energy, renewable energy, where more company can sign up on. So the Bursa requirement for reporting actually will create greater awareness for companies to evaluate themselves. Where am I in this journey? Where are my gaps? What should I do? And who can I approach for help, and so on and so on. So I think that is a good way of monitoring yourself and make it transparent that you are embarking on this journey, and whatever gaps can be taken care of and should be taken care of.
Absolutely. And starting with that energy transition journey, first and foremost, and also, of course, to follow along even Taiwan, the world's largest semiconductor manufacturer, which has already pledged in Feb this year to reduce carbon emissions, despite the potential implications. Dr. Sri Wong, from there, let's go and focus in on the recent surge in E&E investment, FDI. How can it contribute to moving Malaysian semiconductor players higher up in the semiconductor value chain, especially looking at design and development and global business services?
Okay, I think the government has done a good job in attracting FDIs into the country to strengthen our ecosystem. You know, we brought in substrate manufacturing, we brought in fab equipment manufacturing, and many other ecosystem that we need. Okay. At the same time, these companies attracted their suppliers to invest in Malaysia. Okay. So now we are, as you know, we are quite strong in the assembly test world. And we are quite strong in attracting FDIs. So our approach, I think, is that we double down on what we are good at. Mm-hmm. Whatever we are good at today, whether it's automation, whether assembly tests, whether we are attracting FDIs to the country, continue doing. We don't want to stop. And we encourage government agencies that might have done a good job, MITI, to continue doing this. However, we need to go up the value chain. We are already 51 years in the industry. And other countries would have already overtaken us in development of their local industry. And for the likes of China, who started only 20 years ago, and they are already ahead of us. So mm-hmm. The focus that we need to have is go up the value chain. So how are we going up the value chain? There are two paths. One is to attract the FDI. So in the areas of design development, we are attracting many foreign companies to do design development, especially in IC design. They are here, okay? And they are using our talent to develop their capability and serve the company. And two is that we need to develop in parallel local capabilities. How do we develop local capabilities in the country? And so again, we want to encourage more companies in Malaysia, Malaysian companies, to join in this opportunity to create a platform or create an ecosystem where Malaysians can be involved in IC design and also go up the value chain in other design development such as embedded system design. We also encourage the government to look at the fab. How can we attract a fab? Because over the next few years, there are about 90 to 100 fabs in the country, 190 fabs around the world that will be implemented. So we just need to attract one of them to come to Malaysia. Okay, so that's the, I hope that can be achieved.
Shouldn't be too tough given all the interest in Malaysia lately.
It is very tough. It's not easy. But we want to get one because that will be the sweetest honey that you can attract all the other bees to come once we attract one. Yeah.
One first. And casting the net a little bit wider, how can the Asian semiconductor industry then cushion against the more anticipated graver impacts of the US CHIPS Act in 2024?
I guess the CHIP Act have two parts. One is to attract more of their homegrown or their technology back into the country in the US. And the other part was the restriction on, restriction on export or import and development of technology to protect their national security. Okay. So, as you know, because there are a lot of restrictions in place on China, so a lot of the MNCs in China are moving the products out of China, and more restrictions are coming into place. So we hope Malaysia will have that opportunity for these companies to invest in Malaysia or move their products to Malaysia. So you have China plus one strategy. You also have a US plus one strategy. You also have a Europe plus one strategy. And you also have a Taiwan plus one strategy. Hopefully all that plus one, they are looking at Malaysia. I think they are right now.
Mm-hmm. And one more area that is wrong. India, also touted to be the world's second largest economy by 2075, also seeking to build its own semiconductor industry, including via tie-ups with Malaysian semiconductor players. Any MSIA insights or perhaps like a wish list concerning this?
MSIA means so many countries who are interested in the future growth. They want to take a piece of that pie. I just explained to you, if the semiconductor industry is going to grow to 1 trillion by 2030, everybody is looking at an opportunity. Can I take a piece of that pie? Okay, so that's why I say Malaysia cannot be complacent. We have to compete and win more and win for the higher value ones. So, we have so many countries. India is one of them. And, they are putting, resources to attract more semiconductor companies to invest in India. I think Micron have made that announcement, and they are looking for many more. So are other countries. You know, you have Vietnam, you have Europe, and so you have also in Central America. They are all working on the same thing. So I hope Malaysia will also step up and compete, you know, at the global level. And we can compete because we have already 51 years of experience. We know exactly what the market wants. We know exactly what the customer wants. And we know how to strengthen our ecosystem. So when all that come together, including a stable government and a business-friendly government, we will have a very good chance to win this game.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for your time, Dr. Sri Wong. Those sound like plenty of absolute advantages that Malaysia actually has in our favor when it comes to the semiconductor industry, especially looking towards 2024. Thank you once again for taking time to join us on Niaga Spotlight.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's all we have time for today. This has been Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kausji.